It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope you had a great 4th of July, and as we close out the 4th of July weekend, you've had some time to spend some time in the outdoors and hopefully maybe even be able to take a child or a grandchild or a young kid, boy or girl, fishing or hiking or doing something. And I'm not going to spend much time this morning talking about the importance of the next generation or the next generation, depending on how you look at it, getting experiences in the outdoor, but study after study are showing just how well children do when they are exposed to nature versus children who are not exposed to nature, and how it affects not only sometimes their mental state, but also how it affects their physical state and their awareness of being in the outdoors. And if you haven't read it, Richard Lew's book is Last Child in the Woods is really the seminal book on this subject matter. A fabulous read. This morning, I'm going to start off with where I left off last week, which I promised you I would do, and that is flying again across the ocean to South Africa, where I had two experiences that I found to be rather remarkable. I did talk last week about my experience in Durban and with HIV. I'm not talking about that today. We're moving back into the tradition of the Great Outdoors Show to talk about two things that happened while I was there, one of which I think is so unbelievable, at least to an American, that I can't even fathom how it exists like this. But think of the country called Mozambique. No, I did not go to Mozambique. But I sat down with an individual who used to run a hunting concession in Mozambique. And in order to receive a concession for hunting big game in Mozambique, big game being the dangerous five, as they're known, elephants, lions, rhinos, leopards, you have to be able to have an anti-poaching program in place for the concession that you're going to run, or the government, and this is true of all the countries in Africa that I believe, or the government will not give you a permit to bring hunters in. And the funding from hunters in most of Africa provides the funds to stop the poaching of big game animals, particularly elephants and rhinoceros, which are being poached at alarming rates for their ivory, which of course are then crushed down into an aphrodisiac, or believed to be an aphrodisiac powder, that is shipped to primarily to China. And anyone who doesn't believe that China is not in the middle of the illegal, illicit ivory trade has not spent any time talking to people in Africa who are in the middle of trying to stop that poaching. So I don't pretend to be an African expert. I don't pretend to be an expert on ivory trade, but I am fortunate to know individuals who are experts on this, and there is a direct tie between the purchase and transmission of, transfer rather, of ivory to China. And it's illegal, and it goes on virtually unimpeded, even as I'm talking to you this morning. So this individual had a hunting concession in Mozambique. And in order to have it, he had an anti-poaching program in place to protect the concession from poaching. The Chinese are not doing the poaching. The Chinese are paying people to do the poaching. And so he was running a concession, and he was extremely good at stopping poachers. He spent a great deal of money. He had helicopters. He had equipment, tracking devices, and on the very large concession, some 500,000 acres on which he had permission to hunt, he virtually ended the poaching of elephants and rhinoceros. And what would happen is they would come in helicopters, or they would come in other means and burn the poachers' camps while the poachers were out poaching. And then when the poachers came back to camps, they would corral them, and they would take them to the authorities, and the authorities would not prosecute them. But the loss of equipment and the activities of this individual on this concession had a big impact, and you heard me say would not prosecute them. The government of Mozambique, in this case, individuals within the government of Mozambique were on the take, which is not an uncommon occurrence, unfortunately, in Africa, and particularly, I guess, in Mozambique. So this individual was leading a group of hunters who had paid significant amounts of money to legally take big game animals. And they were in camp one evening, and suddenly the camp was surrounded by military figures, and this individual was taken into custody, and he was charged with treason and being, I believe, a spy by the Mozambique government, and was thrown into a Mozambique jail. And if you can think of a worse place in the world to be than a jail in rural Mozambique, I'm not sure where it might be. He was put into a cell with other individuals who tried to assault him. The cell was uninhabitable. The food was inedible. And it was because he had been so successful at stopping the anti-poaching rings that it worked its way up the Mozambique government ladder, if you will, to individuals who were being paid off by the poaching rings' financial resources. And they put an end to this individual's ability to stop poaching by throwing him in jail, where he would have sat and rotted and died. And this is an individual who has spent much of his life trying to protect the wildlife resources of the southern part of Africa, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, an individual who has made a huge difference in Africa when it comes to controlling the poaching of big game animals. So he is sitting in a Mozambique jail being badly treated, and the individuals who put him there are being paid by the poaching rings. So they thought this would be the end of him and his poaching ring. But as happens in South Africa, not in South Africa, what happens in Mozambique and I guess other areas of Africa is it depends on who you know. And if you're sitting here listening or driving down the road listening to this story this morning, but this can't be true, it is true. I sat and looked eye to eye with this individual, and he told me the full story, the graphic details of which I will not go into on the air, but you can only imagine what might have happened in a Mozambique jail cell to a South African individual. So after being in jail for a period of days, I believe a week, other individuals from South Africa were made aware of this, and through the South African government into the Mozambique government, the process to have this individual released and taken out of the country took place. The amount of money that changed hands is absolutely shocking to have this take place, but it goes to show that at least in Mozambique, anyone can be bought. And so what happened to this individual was a group of South African leaders rallied around him, raised the money to have him get out of jail. He went before a judge. The judge told him he had a matter of hours to get out of the country or he would remain in jail for life. And during that time, he left Mozambique and obviously has never returned. That is what goes on in the poaching rings of the southern part of Africa. It is absolutely abhorrent what is taking place. And we look at all these efforts to try to stop poaching and to stop the trade of ivory. And we can circle back to the fact that Asia, primarily China, is the place where this ivory is being sold. And when we listen to the discussion about tariffs and all these things with China, how come there's no question about, wait a minute, what is China doing to African wildlife resources? Why is there no discussion of this? That's a big question. We talk about all the products that are now on tariff lists, but there's no discussion about that China is, in fact, the main driver behind the poaching of big game animals in Africa for the ivory that they possess to go to China to be turned into ivory trinkets and to be turned into this powder aphrodisiac. That's what's driving the illegal trade of ivory in Africa. And if you don't believe me, just go to South Africa and talk to some people who've seen this firsthand, and talk with people or an individual who's actually spent time in a Mozambique jail trying to stop this and the consequences of how high up in the government the corruption runs. Unfortunately, it's a sad story, but it's a true story. Hugo is alive and well and is doing great, but nearly lost his life trying to protect the wildlife resources of Africa. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me. And this story I just told you has a happy ending, because this individual is also an individual that I went hunting with in South Africa. And we hunted for guinea fowl, and we hunted for franklin and ducks and geese, and we traveled for a few days together in South Africa. And it is a country that, if you're going to go bird hunting, it's a lot like America. You could be in Kansas very easily. You could be in the Dakotas, except you don't have the cold. The weather in June in South Africa is as good as anywhere in the world. The nights are cold. You sleep completely. There's no heat in any of the places we stayed, which keeps me a little bit odd as an American. When it gets down to the 30s at night, we generally turn on our gas and light the fire. In South Africa, they light the fire, but the places we stayed for a week did not have any heat of any kind. In the morning, by 10 o'clock in the morning, the temperature's up into the 60s and 70s, and the days are beautiful and they're clear. The winter of June, the heart of winter in South Africa is during their dry season, and it's just an amazingly beautiful country in that regard. The farmland is very much like our farmland. I would say the farms in general do not have all of the modern amenities and equipment and transportation elements that we have, but there certainly is a lot of good farming going on in South Africa, and there's a lot of great bird hunting going on in South Africa, and that's where I'll spend just the last bit of this show before I quickly talk about flooding, which is still going on, record-level flooding in the lower Mississippi Valley. So anyway, we were hunting Franklin, which is very much like, I would call it a grouse. They are hunted with dogs, pointers. You walk across fields. You walk across miles of prairie. And one of the differences between South African, rural South Africa and rural America is that there are still huge swaths of native prairie in South Africa, areas that have not been plowed. This is not true of the United States. Unfortunately, we have just about taken care of most of our native prairie. It's all gone. In South Africa, you can literally look to the horizon in certain places and see nothing but grass as it was from the beginning of time. And every so often, you'll see a zebra or a giraffe walk across that grass while you're hunting upland birds. But it's a savanna of rich grasses. Agriculture continues to cut its way into this and expand, but there's an awful lot of grassland, thankfully, still left in South Africa because there's a lot of cattle in South Africa, which makes for the combination of grain and grass an absolute utopia for bird hunting. And hunting franklin as we did, walking across the prairie, the South African prairie behind pointers, you would just think you're in Kansas. There's no other way to say it. You feel like you've seen this before, only you haven't. And the birds get up in coveys or singles or pairs, and they explode just like a covey of sharp-tailed grouse would. Guinea fowl are a totally different bird. They exist more in a bush, and you cannot possibly sneak up on them. They have the eyes and ears, it seems like, of the most absolutely attuned birds in the world, and they will flush way before you get there. So what you do when you're hunting guinea fowl in South Africa is you actually stand in a line, and the birds are driven towards you just like you would have pheasants or grouse driven towards you in England, only there's lots of noise and singing and dancing as the birds are being driven across this terrain, which tends to be more less grassland and more scrubs. And all of a sudden, you see this thing, which at first looks like about the size of a turkey, but it's not as big as a turkey, but it certainly flies a lot faster than a turkey ever thought of flying, and it explodes in coveys and comes at you. And you're trying to pick a single bird out of a flock of maybe 30 or 50 guinea fowl. It's an experience I'd never had before. Very, very challenging shooting, but it's the whole event of a bird that is truly wild and being flushed towards you, and it takes a number of individuals to form a line to drive the birds towards you, and that's how they hunt guinea fowl in South Africa. So the bird shooting and the duck and goose hunting was phenomenal. I would say that South Africa is managing its game birds extremely well, but they have something that we don't have in America right now. They have lots of native habitat. They have habitat that has never been disturbed, and as a result, they have plenty of places for birds to go. And if we think just here in our backyard in Illinois, what's happened to our pheasants and quail populations, which are virtually gone from the state in a wild sense, there are only a few pockets left of really good bird hunting. It all comes down to habitat. The other thing they have a lot of in South Africa, they have a lot of things that can eat birds, and certainly that is something that we saw a good amount of. The predator population in South Africa is pretty high. So quickly, before I end the show, I just want to say that we are not out of the woods yet when it comes to this epic year of flooding in our river bottoms, virtually from one end of the Mississippi to the other. Aside from the fact that there are going to be several million acres that are never planted this year, we also are seeing the results of this flooding on wildlife, which is not good news. It is going to be a tough, tough year for ground nesting birds and also for deer, who utilize the river valleys from Minnesota all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. There's still an awful lot underwater, and we're way past the nesting season. So it's going to be a year that has been tough for agriculture and tough for wildlife. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more in the Great Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great 4th of July weekend. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.